Caroline Casey. It is the new moon. The new moon in Capricorn today, and it began the prosecution of Israel for genocide at the International Court of Justice. So it is perfect that we welcome Dr. Rupa Maria, co-author with Raj Patel of Inflamed. We did a great show on that, Deep Medicine and the Anatomy of Injustice. Let's go all the way. Medicine and Metaphor and Music, who is especially deft at weaving all the stories together. So what shall we have on trial and accountability as a public ritual? I just remember in Doris Lessing's novel, Shikasta, the global community puts the white race on trial, not for punishment, but for necessary ritual, right? And so everything in that way. So yeah, settler colonialism all over, crimes against the land brought to accountability. Maya founded the Deep Medicine Circle, described as a woman of color-led organization committed to healing the wounds of colonialism through food, medicine, story, restoration, and learning. So welcome, Dr. Rupa Maria.
Thank you. Good to hear your voice again and see you thriving on the airwaves. How are you?
Well, you know, people ask that, right? And I go, engaged, deeply engaged, as are you. Right.
Yes.
So we're really in this whole thing. This is huge, you know, for everybody. And I did find it an auspicious augury that it was they began the trial in The Hague at the dark of the moon, which is traditionally when people gather to determine the course of culture. So that's good. And then whatever radio magic we want to do, we know that Israel is putting political pressure on countries, going, no, just brush this aside, and then backstage bribing as well. So, but I love your broad weaving, and, you know, that this is about the earth and the land, you know, and rulers must wed the land, you know. So how are you navigating this particular public ritual?
Yeah, I am just so grateful to South Africa and see the poetic justice and brilliance of, you know, this nation that has experienced apartheid, has, you know, gone through its own evolution and continues to go through its own evolution in trying to, you know, really throw off the mantle of colonial structures, which I don't think any nation has done. So while, you know, post-World War II, World War I, World War II, we saw the fall of these empires. We didn't see a change in the structures. So we saw cementing of international structures that continue to extract wealth from the global south, that continue to recreate systems of European dominance and supremacy, and that continue to engage in land theft and degradation of peoples and the earth. And so this is a, you know, as the earth is starting to shake off humanity with her climate changing in response to our activities, this is an important moment to pay attention and watch and see how our learning has accelerated and changed and shifted over the last, you know, 75 years of this decolonization process that we are in the midst of.
Yeah, and how can all of our dynamic listening participants, you know, that there are many ways in which to participate, I mean, following the thing, but also adding to the thing, you know, as though the grieving earth herself brings this prosecution on behalf of all flora, fauna, fungi. And so I love, you know, with regenerative organic farmer husband, there you go, you know, farming is medicine. We were going to talk about that before, but it's all one thing, isn't it? You know, it's again healing the land and people stripped from the land who have, you know, well, the word indigenous, I like to follow Sim Curran, is tricky because it was coined by colonizers in the 1660s, the height of colonialism. And they said, well, we're going, the indigenous, which means sprung from the land, you know, we are these people, and that's the indigenous flora, fauna, fungi. But but everywhere, you know, I mean, we're tracking the stories everywhere. I'm reading, you know, this fabulous book, Mean Spirit by Linda Hogan, about, you know, the ripping off of land through murder and theft of Native people in Oklahoma, right? So it's anything that's anywhere is everywhere, right? So it's good to have this on our collective trial altar, right?
Yes, and it has just been bringing up a lot of trauma, I think, a lot for a lot of people who come from legacies of colonialism. So myself, as a Punjabi, a daughter of Punjabi immigrants who was born and raised here in unoccupied, unceded Ohlone territories because of what happened to my family's homeland there, over centuries of colonial domination and extraction, where, you know, 100 million people died of famine that was caused through British colonial policies, just as, you know, the famine and starvation of Gaza is caused through Israel's brutal policies. And it really calls into question, you know, what is this word indigenous and what is the use of this word indigenous, if it can be, you know, weaponized to lay claim to a land in such a brutal way, as I've heard, you know, some of the folks from the Israeli government, you know, frame this as like, no, we're actually indigenous, we're just coming home. But, you know, I think it's important to clarify that all people need a safe and dignified place to a home on this beautiful planet Earth that we live in. All people deserve the right to, you know, practice their religions in safety, or their spiritual practices in safety and dignity. And that right does not mean that, you know, you can push other people off land or kill them or displace them or take their homes or burn their farms and all of the kind of atrocities that we're seeing that are out of the settler colonial playbook 101 that Israel has engaged in over the last 75 years of brutal apartheid and oppression of the Palestinian people. It's important to just, you know, look at where those behaviors come from, what they're akin to in the histories that we've all lived through, and how we can invite people to evolve and move into a space of sharing the earth, sharing our resources, sharing the capacity to live together on land and be together in a neighborly relationship. And I think about that same problem with my homeland. The Punjab was also cut in two by the British. Muslims over here and everyone else over here, and the bloodshed that resulted, and the Islamophobia that remains still entrenched in Indian society, especially under the Hindu fascist model that we see with Modi's regime right now. These are echoing the same kind of patterns that we're seeing around the world in different places coming up. And so I think that it is important to learn how to recognize patterns, just like you do in music, like here's the theme, here's the variation on the theme, so that we can say, you know, is this really what we want for humanity? Do we want to be bombing like a tiny strip of earth into such, you know, in such a violent way that it's going to take generations for the soil to recover? What about our more than human relatives there on the land? What about the children under that rubble? And so when, you know, we can sit and think about, you know, what we want to do going forward, it's a really important time to think about that. For myself as a healthcare provider, as a physician, has been deeply shocking to me. I've been in, you know, on the phone with Dr. Hassan Abusita, who is giving testimony at The Hague, was connected with him in the second week of October, and just getting, you know, just getting his words out as best as I could, to a world that didn't want to hear them, as he was documenting through his words the unfolding genocide, the targeting of the healthcare systems, the bombing of the hospitals, the murdering of doctors and nurses and healthcare workers engaged in the act of care. And as I was getting these words out to the British Medical Journal, who requested from me an essay that they then refused to publish because of I just sent them his words. And so that the silencing of Western medical institutions in the face of watching an entire healthcare system structure destroyed, from the, you know, the targeting of ambulances to like the bombing of blood banks to the destruction of cancer facilities. People in Gaza right now don't have access to any basic care. So children are going out without their basic vaccinations, and 50,000 women who are pregnant or people who are pregnant who are going to give birth don't have access to prenatal care or perinatal care. They're on their own. You know, people don't have access to food, water, electricity, because these things are being chokehold by Israel. And that is not, you know, those that kind of collective punishment and violence and the war crimes of targeting healthcare facilities are truly an atrocity. And I'm glad to see that Hassan Abusita, Dr. Shit Abusita, is there in The Hague giving that testimony. Because for me as a healthcare worker, what has been so demoralizing has been the utter complicity and silence of U.S. medical institutions, from the AMA, who categorically silenced the, you know, Black and Brown and SWANA residents and fellows and medical students who brought forth a ceasefire resolution early on in this issue, in this situation, to, you know, the Journal of the American Medical Association publishing this horrific piece that tried to give more moral ambiguity around bombing hospitals, which they still haven't retracted. It's an unbelievable time to be alive as a physician, when I thought, you know, all of us had a commitment to saying, you know, let's not kill anybody. Let's actually not advocate for killing. I've heard doctors in my own midst advocating to keep the killing going. And that really? To me is a real, yeah, it's a real tragedy. It's a deep tragedy.
And what do they say? What do they say?
That a ceasefire would give Hamas the upper hand, so we really don't want to have a ceasefire right now.
Right.
So I think that, you know, I would have expected healthcare providers to say, violence in any form, any violence, must stop, so that we can protect the rights and health of all people. I certainly stand by that. That any violence, we don't want to see children injured. We don't want to see people's health and dignity violated under any circumstance. But that's not where we're at right now, and to me, that's a very troubling aspect of how this particular issue has impacted the moral bearings of the medical institutions in the West.
Yes, there's so much in what you say, and then we just put on our work table, let every tyranny, like every small petty thing and large cruelty. There's no cruelty possible that the Israeli government military has not tried to impose. We'll get to that in the fullness of time. But yeah. So let every tyranny be an incentive to experiment for greater freedom. There are really good voices out there. There's a huge global rally on Saturday, the 13th, and big thing in D.C. And we go. The people that I follow, you know, including yourself, Instagram is really where it's happening. Again, so many brave, powerful doctors and people, and you know, and Wizard Bassan, you know, reporting. And that's the crucial thing. When people go, well, what about October 7th? You know, and I go, right. If October 7th was being live broadcast, we would all go, oh my God, let's stop that right now. I mean, this is being live broadcast. It's like, whoa. So, yeah, the silence of the AMA. You did just get disinvited. We don't want to spend too much time on this pettiness over here, but from Siena College, because you were talking about Zionists in medicine, and they were like, she's criticizing all Jews. But they were very sneaky that way, of conflating, you know, she's against Jewish doctors, which is not at all what you were saying.
Not at all.
What is...
No,
right,
not at all.
Exactly.
That's really important to clarify that the criticism of a political ideology. So like if you criticize racist police violence in the United States and most of the police enacting that violence are white, you're not criticizing all white people. You're criticizing a system and a structure that is based in a dynamic of power. If you criticize, you know, understanding the roots of Zionism, reading the founding documents of Zionism, reading the ideology, where it came from, what it meant. In the United States, you'll hear people who call themselves Zionist Jews say, well, we just believe Jews deserve a right to a home with self-determination. I believe that, too. I believe that for all people. People should have the capacity to take care of their communities and to be protected in their abilities to live their lives without discrimination, without fear of discrimination. And the discrimination that Jewish people have experienced historically has been horrific and should not continue. That's not the same thing as saying, and to secure that, it's okay to enact violent apartheid, to have, young children picked up off the street in Palestine and put into prison without trial, to take over people's homes and to throw them out on the street, to, violently oppress them. That's, those two things are not the same thing. So you can say, yes, I agree that people should have a home. Just like I believe that the pilgrims who came to this land, who were fleeing religious persecution, should have a safe place on this planet to be who they were, and what they needed to practice and believe and how they needed to be. Unfortunately, that came with a system of an ideological system of supremacy, that, Christians were better than other people, that those people, the native people here, were savage, that they were civilized. There were all these dynamics, these Cartesian dualistic dynamics that were set up in the 1600s, in the 1400s, 1500s, under the papal decree that said it's okay to go and steal the land and enslave all the brown and Muslim and black people in the world for the purpose of your profit. So if that's coming from the Pope, and that, doctrine of discovery is the law of the land, or even the architecture of thought, it's going to cause problems. So that those two things shouldn't be conflated. The need to be safe, absolutely. The need to create unsafety for other people so you can be safe, not okay. Not okay. But, and so that's where we need to learn how to separate and go, this is a political ideology about power, and this is a religion and a people. Like, and those two things should not be conflated, because there are so many Jews, especially here in the Bay Area, who are part of our communities, who are not, do not espouse Zionist ideologies, who do not agree with at all with what's happening in Israel for the last 75 years. One of them was Albert Einstein, right? So it's like you have lots of people who cannot be invalidated in their Jewishness or their commitment to Judaism and their beautiful histories and ancestries. And those ancestries deserve respect and love and protection. But that's not the same thing as saying that an ideology of supremacy that holds one group of people as superior to other people and enacts rights and dynamics on the land based on that ideology is the same thing. And so the conflation of those two things, I've come to understand as a tool to silence criticism of Israel right now. It's an attempt to, not give voice to Arab, Swana, brown people's experiences of racism, and it's a dangerous tool. So, and I think intellectually, it's important that we, understand and assert these differences, because we need to be able to talk about racism, we need to be able to talk about structures of supremacy. We need to be able to talk about violences on one another and the earth. And that's not to say, so that's just, I'll just leave that there.
Yeah. But so, yeah, so you're dedicated to decolonizing medicine. Well, decolonizing everything, decolonizing farming, which again is then brings in kind of, well, what I like to call democratic animism, again, participating with everything, with the soil and the thing and the frogs and the, yeah. Yeah, and as Sim Kern, whom I do recommend following on Instagram, sometimes a little provocative, not to me, but to some perhaps, but useful, always useful. And she just ends one of her really interesting riffs by just saying, everyone gets a place to live and everyone has equal rights, because that's just how it's got to be, right? And there's a long build up to that and a really great thing. Can a settler be indigenous, as one of her also wonderful rift. And what is the behavior? And here's the behavior. And then what I want to toss back to you is tyranny hates community. I mean, for especially diverse community, whether it's South Africa and District 6, which I hold in my heart, but everywhere where it's like, oh, look at all these different people having a great time, we must destroy it. And then tyranny feeds on strife, and polarity going, oof. And it's really a big, sneaky bamboozling in which everybody gets hoodwinked into like, run a minute. And the last thing I want to just put on the table and toss back to you is, Learned Druid says, if you want people to get nothing done but conflict, convince them they're on one side of something, and you will only get heat.
Right.
What two needs is three, which is the unifying story. Let me toss it back to you. The unifying story. Here we are. What do we want, right?
Right. Yeah. So how do we tap into our shared humanity? How do we reject the logic of any supremacism, any of it, even including human supremacy over the web of life? How do we re-enter sacred relationship
Definitely.
With the web of life and one another? So these are really critical. This is the work of decolonizing, of insisting upon our radical relationality with one another, whether we are Sikh or Hindu or atheist or, you know, whatever identity we're coming from, and understanding that the earth is in a critical moment. And every moment we're spending bombing each other and murdering each other, we are not spending moving forward the solution so that people can be safe and communities can be held and the earth can be tended and the water can be protected and the salmon can be restored. There's critical work that needs to be happening right now. And these politics and dynamics of division and the kind of really mind-bending logic that I'm seeing about, this kind of gaslighting, this global gaslighting we're seeing happening, has been a phenomenal way to stun people into inaction. But I encourage people to become active, to challenge where we're being told we must be silent, to speak with respect, but speak clearly, to question why you're getting blowback. If I had a talk rescinded at a college, that's fine. Like, if that's what they need to do to address their people and where they're at, I would love to hear from the students and how they feel. I'm hearing from a lot of students in other places around the country about how they feel. And it's important to look to how to lead in ways where the young people can understand that we can only create safety for one another when we enter a level of relationship that honors and respects everyone's place. That doesn't mean that we honor and respect systems of supremacy or ideologies of violence. That does not mean we honor and respect genocide and apartheid and hold some side of like, oh, we need to have a nuanced approach or both sides. There is no both sides to apartheid. When we were talking about ending South African apartheid, we were not giving equal time on the phone for the people wanting to uphold apartheid and the people suffering under the grinding heel of apartheid. Same thing went for, different other kinds of oppressions. When we see genocide, we're not giving both sides. It's not a both sides situation when you're having this kind of targeting, these, crushing of healthcare systems, these like the murder of thousands of children. That's a time to say we need to stop. We need to stop. And we need to start looking at what are these structures that have allowed Israel to behave in this way that it thought it could get away with it. Because I remember at the beginning of this conflict, someone from their government said it was on the news. I don't understand why people are so upset. No one had this reaction when it was ISIS. Like, they were genuinely surprised that people were shocked as we were watching the live streaming of this violence onto all of our phones around the world. And that to me was a really telling moment. Like, oh, they really thought that these Palestinian lives mattered so little. And that wasn't like a new idea that just cropped up in people's heads. That is an idea that has been inculcated through a system of supremacy for 75 years. That is a project. Just as the same with here in California, Native people, there are people, the Hopland Band of Pomo, an hour north of San Francisco, don't have access to running water. Right? Like, why is it that our California Native people don't have the best access to water, clean water, salmon, all the things that they need to thrive in their communities and in their places? Why is that? Well, it's because we have been told they don't even exist. We have not been taught about the genocide that has happened here, that continues. It's ongoing. It's an ongoing erasure because we don't even think that folks are still here, and they're definitely still here. And they're very much organizing and working to get access to these critical, important things that they need to be well. So So what if instead, when you say, like, what do we do? What if instead we here as settlers on this stolen land, that we were to reorient ourselves and say, I want to be a participant in the healing. I want to be a participant in making sure that everybody here who is of these lands can be restored and healed and help us heal together. Would we have that many homeless people? Would we have people unhoused, on like people stepping over people on the sidewalk? I don't think so. Would we have a situation where people don't have access to food? I don't think so, because those are not the values that California Native people lived with for thousands and thousands and thousands of years in this land. Those are values of the settler colonial reality that we've been forced to accept as, quote, reality. But it's not. It's designed. It's invented. It's an architecture of power that is being called into question right now on the international stage, that we must learn how to apply that same analysis here, because my friend Kim De Ocampo, who called me yesterday, after she heard me on the radio, she said, I am a survivor of genocide. That genocide has happened here, and it continues to happen here. And when we can hear that and we can really take that to heart, we can decide together collectively as people how to correct that. And that's what I'm really interested in. And that's what Gaza is gifting the world. And that's why when people say, when Palestine is free, we will all be free. Because when we can see the treachery that's happening there, and that has been allowed to happen there, and that continues to happen, when we see how students have been silenced, faculty have been silenced, people have been doxxed, being harassed by their own institutions, we see the crushing silencing that's happened when people just say, let Palestine be free. Let these people be free. Let them have rights. Let them have rights. Like, that is the most radical thing you could say right now. People have been fired for just saying that. And that is, a very interesting thing in this moment, because this is a time where we need to become very, very critically aware about why these things are happening and what kind of world we want to move forward.
Yes. Yeah. And I know you have to go, pretty soon. But just on way out, so many good voices. I mean, we are in a global truth transit. So as much suppression as there's very smart, informative, educated conversations kind of going on. And so when Gabor Mate, early on just said, I survived the Holocaust as a baby. I was a Zionist. I thought the dream of Israel was beautiful. I was, a Zionist dream. How wonderful. But then I realized that our dream was resting on somebody else's nightmare. And that's the settler colonialism. And then we tease it to hear what of our prosperity is built on enslaved people, massacred indigenous people. I mean, that's part of your dedication for the longest time, right? That narrative that we be aware, and then reconcile in humans humbly cooperating with nature's guiding genius for actual community to be restored. Yeah.
Yes, that's beautiful, and I know it's happening in the small and beautiful ways in the communities that we're a part of. I just want to uplift the work of Dr. Jeff Hanum, like just from the medical community, who's our, Palestinian doctor at UCSF, and Manal Alkara, who's been just such a great help for us as physicians, learning how to see what's happening in our midst and how we can grow and heal and learn. And Dr. Lee Kimberg, who's been such a great just a great voice of justice and violence prevention, and Nurse Rosa Villarreal, who's also our nurse union CNA representative at UCSF, who's just been tremendous. She's from Mapuche ancestry and has worked with the Deep Medicine Circle on our Heal the Healers program, where we brought nurses and doctors and students to the land, at this land that we're returning to our friends at the Confederation of Ohlone People on the San Mateo coast to compost our grief around the pandemic and how many people's lives were just, made disposable by this structures and the system, and how many workers were made, disposable by the same structures and systems, and how that helped us awaken. And that's what I see through this work. And, the brilliant organizing that happened around passing the San Francisco ceasefire resolution, that was really led by AROC and JVP and all these amazing organizations, the work of Palestinian youth movement. There's so many resistance groups that have known each other, the Do No Harm Coalition, that have been in community together, Anti-Police Terror Project. And so now when these things come up, we're able to organize together and build on the ways in which we love and take care of one another over years. And that has been, to me, a tremendous testament to the power of movement building, that we as groups of people can come together in these ways to get stuff done and to really move and shift the structures of culture beyond the control and influence of corporate dollars and other special interest dollars coming into our political sphere. And this will become very important, you know, as we look at, you know, Dean Preston running again at D5. We all need to support him because there's a lot of money coming in from billionaires to try to unseat him. Right now, the attempted recall at Mayor Sheng Tao and Pamela Price, our DA, these are attempts of these, you know, very right-wing, very moneyed groups to dismantle people who are interested in structural change for different health outcomes, for different outcomes for communities. And so we need to continue to build our organizing and taking care and teaching and being with our communities so that all people can have a safe place to be, that the Jewish people, Muslim, Tswana, Black, Brown, Indigenous, you know, people of European, Christian, all the different ancestries, all the different beautiful aspects of humanity can be here together and be safe, uplifted, and respected. And that is, you know, with equal rights. And that's the whole point of this work.
Yes. And I think you have to go. I have to reluctantly release you. Is that right?
That is correct, Carolyn. Thank you so
okay,
much for your generosity.
Let me just send you off with one thing that I treasure from your book in our last conversation, which is just we live in a storytelling creation. You know, and you said that when many of your colleagues at UCSF got COVID, they lost their sense of smell, except all they could smell was forests burning. And I said that to a friend, and he goes, "That's right. That's what happened to me." Right? That it's all speaking to us. If we just approach the world with informed, reverent curiosity, it's telling us, right? I mean, that was a nugget of in your book, Inflamed, which ties everything together. Again, COVID, virus, colonialism, really great. That's just the kind of storytelling we want, Dr. Rupa.
Thank you so much. I can't wait to get back to writing music.
Oh, okay. All right. Well, that's the music, you know. You know, the word to dream comes from an old English word, dreamon, and it meant two things, to dream and to make music, same word. So making music is a way of participating and dreaming the world into being. So you're doing it.
Oof, that's what got to do. And, all right. Well, thank you.
Yeah, music and healing were one thing, and they are in you. All right. Thank you. We will keep conversing going.
Take care. Lots of love.
You too. All right. So off she goes. Again, her time is precious. It is wonderful. So we'll take our mid-hour break a little, just a few minutes late right now, with the playing of the pretty, let me set it up for us. It's called Storm by Oti Ken. We know this is the new moon today. We will come back and talk about that. And it was the day when the holding Israel accountable at the International Court of Justice began this morning. And I think this is a rousing thing. Feel free to move around to this song. Here's Oti Ken, Storm. Чай нам. I hope we were undulating to that song. That is so good. That's Otiken and their woofiness. It's called Storm. And if you go to Patreon, Visionary Activist Show, where for just hardly anything to get in, I put all the show notes and the music and whatever, and you can hear that particular, well, see the video with the words, which are really great. Without the words, it's like, Wodna. And that's the part now to go, ooh, it's the earth herself holding, not people, but those possessed by settler colonialism, right? Oh, you know, to compost that. And that idea of, you know, really kinned and the power of music, like we're tapping into South Africa, Ireland, you know, Palestine, the liberating parts of all traditions. You know, I've been working for some while with the theme, just to unfurl it again for us all. You know, there's the diaspora. Everything starts as one. Everything one, as Deborah Falmouth says, shalom and salam, peace, not the absence of conflict, the presence of oneness. We're all in this dream together, all one thing. So we start off that way, and then the diaspora, the seeds go everywhere. Different people, different languages, different customs to different, you know, all kinned with the land, some nomadic, you know, all right. You know, and then it goes way, way out there, and sometimes it gets a little orthodox out there, or a little controlling or straight. It loses its undulation out there in the outer realms. And now the cispera, a word I have coined because cis means together, right? Dia, apart, cis, together, here we go. Calling in the liberating poetry and music and beauty and of all traditions kinned with the earth. It's all earth mysticism. You know, we remember Neil Douglas Klotz, you know, guiding us to Aramaic, the language of that land in the Middle East, of everybody, you know, you know, Jews and Muslims and Christians, and, you know, speaking Aramaic, which is a highly metaphoric language and all earth-based. You know, so Neil said, you know, what comes to us as blessed are the peacemakers. He goes, yeah, that's good. But in Aramaic, it's blessed are those who plant peace, right? That, you know, all magic is literalized metaphor. By the planting of this tree, may this neighborhood bloom. And we look at the devastation in all fairy tales and all myths and deeding, you know, Gilgamesh itself. It's like the cutting down of forests is like, oh, woe unto, there we go. So, yeah, so all of that. And so there's much on our work table before us. You know, the world falling apart, narco-terrorist coup in Ecuador, you know, Hezbollah and the IDF, you know, going, oh, no more, the threats, IDF threatening Beirut. I was getting that little tight summary from Kyle Kulinski, whom I find a deft analyst to follow. Again, all these people who are cultivating their craft, and no one's, we're all befoibled, right? But who brought what? And I think part of what is strong, you know, is revelation. Did you know? Huge education going on, history education of complexity going, oh, I didn't know. And that idea of awakening, like, oh, I had no idea. I had no idea that our wealthy American culture, well, no, it's hard to imagine, really, you know, was is based on, you know, enslaved people's work and the ravaging of that's why all one story. And I just wanted to say a little bit about here's somebody, a smart medicine Paulo Mayombe guy on Facebook, Ernesto Mercer, but this was useful. He said, way back on Halloween, a friend asked me if I'd seen The Killers of the Flower Moon. I answered, no, I haven't seen it, but that I'd read it. And then they asked if I liked the book, and I said it was mid. They then asked why I thought so, and I said, Linda Hogan's novel, Mean Spirit, a finalist for the Pulitzer Prize, was by light years the better novel. The friend then asked me who Linda Hogan was, and I answered, the Chickasaw author of more than 20 books, novels, poems, a memoir, and I can't name one of them that's not great. Who wrote the story better 33 years ago, who I guaranteed hasn't made a 90th of what David Grann, the white author of Killers of the Flower Moon, has made from his novel in her whole career. But I bet he read Mean Spirit. The main difference, he spreads a lot more time glorifying white men, and also she is by far the superior writer. I asked my friend why they think they'd never heard of Linda Hogan. I think we know why, and that's America. So I read that, you know, a ways back, and I immediately ordered Mean Spirit by Linda Hogan, and it is all that he said, you know. And it's so pertinent to now, right, as we track everything going, I mean, the horror inflicted on all life in the Middle East, yes, October 7th, and yes, the hostages, yes, embracing all, but the live, outrageous cruelty every moment going on in Gaza and the West Bank, you know, so all native stories, you know, are pertinent to us now as we place settler thieving, murdering, colonialism on trial, not for punishment, but for revelation and resolution. And what shall we do? You know, part of where we're all moving, the gift of this year, this tumultuous, crazy, tyranny, dangerous, crackpot year, you know, of cruelty. I want to come back to the cruelty part. You know, we've outsourced leadership and Mars and military to sociopathic people who do not know about grief. They know about grievance, but they do not know about grief. You know, with every single story, you know, that one follows, it's so intimate, you know, in Gaza. It's like one of those stories, you know, the man who, well, they go, I mean, any one of those stories, the man whose, you know, three kids and his wife were killed, and then his firstborn son was killed, just, any one of those stories would be a global news story for a week, you know, like, oh my God, look at this terrible thing that happened. There's one of those every 10 minutes or less, like, whew. And the level of gratuitous cruelty, you know, reports coming in from the trucks lined up, right, to bring relief, the trucks with water that are bombed, right. So, you know, who treats water this way? This is like a nefarious, grotesque cartoon. It's out of control. And as people have noted, you know, it's like this has nothing to do with the hunt for Hamas. Nothing. You know, it's like they're in amazing tunnels. I mean, the you know, I think it was the Hamas released movies of their tunnels, and then Israeli intelligence did too. It's like, oh my God, those are incredible. But Hamas is in Qatar, you know, in Lebanon. There's bombing of Beirut. You know, it's a very tippy time right now, so it behooves us, right? Remember, Terry Pratchett says, magic is easy. You just find the fulcrum and push, or I even prefer find the fulcrum and blow, like, so with this trickster dynamic, that's a positive thing, energy, it could go many, many ways. It's a tinderbox. You know, so the gratuitous cruelty, you know, is just amazing. and the Israeli politicians are making South Africa's case for them. They're just naked. They're, you know, Israeli politician, Israeli Nissim Vateri, a member of the Israeli Knesset, says people of Gaza must be burned, all of them. I have no pity for them. It's like, okay, take it to the court, add it to the list of genocide. You know, and there's all that. But then the trucks lined up to deliver aid. The Israeli rule is after you've spent 12 hours in the truck waiting and you get to the border, you must take everything out of the truck. You must take everything out of the truck. You know, and if there's one thing that is like, oh, no, you're denied and you must go back. You can't leave anything. You go, oh, this tent pole is too long. It might be used as a spear. They just, oh, it's enough to make one combust and one's not even there. It's like, oh. So every single opportunity for like mean cruelty, like this is the devolutionary nadir. And because we are friends of everyone's soul, we are friends of accountability, because it's not good for anybody to get away with this. And then as, and well, let me just get a little teeny report. Here's an Israeli member of the Knesset speaking out in the West Bank. It's just a little short segment, but here we go to hear from the West Bank.
I'm a member of the Knesset, but the police is not interested in that. They don't care about my immunity. They don't care about my rights. They just care about protecting the criminal settlers who invade here. And you see, they keep shooting now. They keep shooting here, although the demonstrators are peaceful. They didn't do anything. We didn't do anything. This is the police of this fascist government that protects the criminal settlers against the Palestinian indigenous people and against peaceful demonstrators. All the world should know what's going on here. Don't support this neo-Nazi government. Do something about it.
Okay, we will. We do what we can. That was Ofer, again, of course, he's a member of the Israeli Knesset. They're now trying to boot him out because he's also joined the lawsuit with South Africa against Israeli government because he loves Israel, because he loves his true community, because he does not want, you know, the goodness to be kidnapped by this, you know, vile cruelty. You could hear some of that, right? They do not care that I'm a member of Knesset. They do not care that they'll shoot anything. They shoot anything. It's a issue of soul loss. You know, Ed Tick, whom we will be re-hosting on radio many years ago, and he's continued to do excellent work, soul medicine, because we want to speak of this, you know, the nefarious cruelty and the war culture and the dominate the earth and kill everything culture everywhere, right? So Ed Tick, you know, again, soul medicine, how do we, you know, heal this impulse and in veterans? And one of the things he said is that because he's been treating veterans since the Vietnam War all the way up through now, and he said the technology is making it more horrific. One, more people are surviving, but the technology of killing has gotten so... So he said, you know, in the ancient days, even unto Vietnam, you would fire like maybe 100 shots. Dum, 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 dum. Now, once you start firing, you know, one of the automatic weapons, you've killed, it's like, it's 500 rounds before you reload. You've killed everything in front of you, and your soul has left. That's it. You know, and then you are even more possessed by this kind of crazy thing. There's all these... the Israeli soldiers, okay, not Israeli, the Israeli soldiers, again, possessed by, I think possession is a useful metaphor, as they, you know, blow up gratuitously, like, look at that, they're just boom, boom. Now, with no pretense that there's Hamas there, it's like, no, let's blow it up, this is for my girlfriend, you know, and they're laughing and smoking, and well, smoking's okay, but anyway, all of that is like, ooh, possessed, you know, so there is that. South African lawyers, yes, they are presenting the U.S. government as complicit. And it's like true in principle. We do want that broad story. If they bring formal charges, it makes it more likely for America to blow it off, right? And yeah, we're all working on these things. But what shall we all see? I did the chart for the beginning of the trial. It is the new moon in Capricorn today. And it's interesting, the image for the sun right now is a general accepts defeat and surrenders his sword. We work with metaphor. And that would include, you know, Hamas as well. You know, hostages released. What is it we want to see? You know, the planetary dance, the intelligence within us all says, don't stick to realism. It'll just be depressing and download, you know, generations of ancestral futility and gloom. The power of a new moon in Capricorn, which is like, what is our intention? What is our dedication? What is the desirable thing? You know, and just to the whole larger dance. So there, it is the Pluto moon sun conjunction. Mars just entered Capricorn. Again, this is the earliest image for Capricorn moon in Capricorn is the council of people dedicated to the next seven generations. We've heard that, you know, but now this is it. This is really it. We're all part of that dynamic. And so the Saturn part of all of us, called the ruler of Capricorn, says, you know, dedicate to the desirable vision. It's the Alam al-Mithral. You know, in a beautiful, beautiful, I love Alam al-Mithral, Arabic word for the place where all images are real. The Alam al-Mithral. It's the fountain of desirable vision. That's where we have access to. We have keys to that. So we might, in a restraining way, say the flow of weapons to cease, the flow of life and rivers to increase, the flow of weapons to cease. Right? We don't know how yet. We don't know how yet. But the planetary pattern says make the dedication and the desirable vision. You know, and Jupiter and Uranus, there's many auspicious, cool things. You know, say, we will do how, we will do how. Let me just bring a little of our cooperators who are standing by into play. Remember, believe nothing, entertain possibilities. Here's the sky story of what we're being so beyond our worthiness, bestowed opportunity. So Jupiter stationing in the sky now in its forward motion, the image for its degree is a cantilever bridge over a rocky gorge, you know, finding a way to get there. So auguries, I have my Hi John the Conqueror candle behind me. I highly recommend just it's like a Bible to me, Zora Neale Hurston's book, Collected Stories, with her essay on Hi John the Conqueror. So crucial, a powerful trickster, redeemer, folk hero of the South, about whom it was said, he finds a way out of no way and hits a straight lick with a crooked stick. And it's like, oh, be with us. Be with us. Hi, John. I'm just reaching for, in case Zora Neale wants to speak to us. He, again, the trickster redeemer within us all quickening. You know, Jupiter is at 5 degrees Taurus. It trines Mars exalted at 5 Capricorn, going, we are wealthy with dedication. I don't know about you all, but I just felt like I never blame planetary patterns, right? But it's like, oh, it's so hard to get anything done. I can't even take the Christmas tree down. I haven't even sent out Christmas cards. I can't, you know, and it's like, maybe I'm waiting for the new moon. And then today I was like, I'm getting stuff done. All right. Sometimes it is tidal. But anyway, so I had the Hi John the Conqueror, you know, candle behind me, and it exploded yesterday before a reading. I'm like, whoa, an augury into sharp shards of glass. I'm like, whoa, all right, Hi John, I guess we should, you know, check you out and honor you and bring you into play, you know, because what Zora Neale at the very, very end, you know, again, he's interested in living. Oh, it's interesting because then, yeah. So I was picking up just now before showtime the shards of glass and I cut my little finger and blood. And it's like, ooh, blood. And now blood is all over Zora Neale Hurston's writing. Thank you, Hi John. We looked everything. And it's said that Hi John did not go away, did not die, but like King Arthur who went to Avalon, Hi John goes to live in Hi John the Conqueror root. I have some right here. You know, and just the last little bit, you know, that Zora Neale has to say, the thousands of upon thousands of humble people who still believe in him, the power of love and laughter to win over violence and cruelty. Do John reverence by getting the root of the plant in which he takes up his secret dwelling. It's there to help them overcome things they feel they could not beat otherwise, and to bring them the laugh of the day. John will never forsake the weak and the helpless, nor fail to bring hope to the hopeless. That is what they believe, and so they do not worry. We go on laughing and singing. Things are bound to come out right tomorrow. Hi, John is never, you know, we call upon, and Jupiter find a way out of no way, trines Mars in Capricorn. Mars's image is 10 logs lie in front of an archway leading to darker woods, the need to be ritually prepared. It's right next to Mercury in Sagittarius, an ancient bridge. It's right next to Ceres, Demeter, dwarf planet, goddess of the earth at 19 Sagittarius, which astrologers say is the resolving climate crisis degree through long-term vision. So Ceres and Sagittarius, the diaspora, the many, with a beautiful 150-degree angle to Uranus, genius trickster stationing at 19 Taurus. So it's the many, but all kin to the land. You know, come on back to what you love, to be cultural agents, that all traditions, you know, find their rootedness back in participating and stewarding the land. And that's the nature of what we're, you know, electing in this, the augury, though there's more to say on all those things. But we're winding down here just a smidge, but to compost cruelty, to hold dominance and cruelty accountable, to see binding, to see, you know, each moment is precious in Gaza. It's so horrific, the relentless cruelty. Now, to bind that, Saturn says, you know, accountability is the sine qua non for democracy and the sine qua non for life on this planet. You know, that may we be more like animals, you know, again, community, who would only outsource leadership to those dedicated to collective well-being. May we be more like that. So here we go. You can find out more notes, more afterthoughts, all of that at Patreon Visionary Activist Show. We will reconvene next week. Thanks always to Kirsten Thomas, and thanks to Dr. Rupa Maria and her wonderful weaving of things. And I highly recommend Mean Spirit by Linda Hogan, because it's all one story. Thank you, team.